Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Hello, hello, hello. The Human Technology Podcast is back after the little winter Christmas CES break that I had. For those that I have not yet seen this year or I've had not yet contact with, I wish you a super happy, super healthy, super successful New Year. And this goes out to everyone, even if we already had some kind of interaction. As announced in December, this first episode in 2025 will be on the Consumer Electronics Show, the CES of 2025. As almost every year, I traveled to Las Vegas early January, attended the event. I was an exhibitor being part of the activity of the P3 group of my partners from P3. And I had the chance to walk through the halls and get my impressions. And this is what this podcast episode is based on. If you are interested in all the details, if you want to read it, if you want to read it over and over again and learn from this, I compiled a report on the event. It has some like 27, 28, 29 pages. All the details, there's everything in there I will talk here in this episode, and it is also containing much more content. Just send me a message. It's free, but it's definitely valuable if you want to have your copy. Send me a message through any of the channels you can reach me, or on LinkedIn, or an email, and you will get your free copy. I'm planning at least two episodes of the Human Technology Podcast on the CES. Maybe it's going to be three, probably two. So this week I will focus on what I have seen there, the things that were actually shown there, the automotive products, automotive technologies, and automotive HMIs. This will be today's focus. In the next episode, I will talk more about the generic trends and first of all about the future of the automotive industry, which is something that should worry us. And I talked to many people, and almost everyone said, yeah, we are in a transition phase at the moment, and we need to take care to keep the Western automotive industry alive or not. I mean, this is our decision, and this is based in our and what we do and all the information we have, and this is why probably you are listening to this podcast. So a bit of background about the background, a couple of generic things about the CES. I had my Apple Watch on, and I walked about 63 kilometers, which equals 35 miles in these 4 days by foot. I used various shuttle buses and also the Las Vegas monorail. Compared to European public transport, it is more like a joke, But if you travel along the strip, this train is not a bad choice. Not a bad choice. You can use that. I had my business card postcards printed before the CES, and I distributed 68 of them, hoping to initiate business contacts, partnerships, cooperations, collaborations by distributing them in my network. The CES contained this year more than 4,500 exhibitors, including 1,400 startups. I think it's not the highest number ever, but it is amongst the highest. And it is indicating, let's say, the return to its old glory of the CES. It has been stopped by the pandemic, and there have been changes, and I will talk about these changes probably next week. And so it was, but it was a good and big show. With more than 141 attendees, CTA, the organizer of the CES, says 40% representing international participants. I had the feeling that there were more. The amount of non-US American, non-North American participants was higher. Particularly my personal impression, just by walking around and seeing the people, that Asian attendees were very prominent. We had years with a very low number of Chinese, Japanese, Korean attendees, but it seems like they are back there. 6,000 global media members, content creators, industry analysts, and the CES is more than just the exhibition, the show on the show floor. 300 conference sessions, 1,200 speakers, and I don't know where they got that figure from, 27,000 news stories and content pieces, and probably my report and my podcast is not included in that number. Since its opening every year, the West Hall is the automotive hall. That's where the automotive industry is. OEMs, there is also suppliers, service companies, part suppliers. They are focused in the West Hall. This year, for the first time, the part of the North Hall, a significant part of the North Hall, about a third, I would guess, was dedicated to micromobility. All these e-bikes and scooters, and I find this pretty interesting that in the years before, micromobility had been part of the West Hall. Now it has a separate area, which I find very interesting. First of all, it shows that there is a high number of companies, and I will get into this why this is the case. And they have a significant appearance. They are shown there, and they show up there, which is showing a clear trend that we see there. There have also been automotive exhibits in other areas. BMW was on the Central Plaza, as every year. NXP also, Conti. Valeo had a separate area, also close to the Central Plaza. Toyota showed its cars on the Central Plaza. Couple of companies have been in the Central Hall, particularly Harman and Afila. They are part of their, let's say, mother company, Samsung or Sony, respectively. They are shown in the Central Hall, where the consumer devices are, all these TVs and refrigerators and smart robots, smart homes. All that is shown there. And then there is the South Hall, which is more or less on parts and supplies and gaming things. So that was roughly the distribution. There have been many companies in Suites in the surrounding hotels. This is a concept a couple of companies have, that they do not go to the show floor, but that they rent a suite in one of the big hotels and have then invitation-only meetings. You have to arrange them up front. You can show up there. And it has the advantage that it is more quiet. It is less stress there. It's less fuzz there. You can have deeper discussions. It's less noisy. And this makes it more convenient there. On the other hand, I believe a show is that you show yourself, that you go out and present what you have, because you will have zero people that just pass by, that just walk in and have a look at your products. It's a company decision. And interesting is that some companies always have these closed booths and the suites, and some companies always have something on the show floor, and some switch one year this way, one another year that way. Both concepts have advantages and disadvantages, of course. And the thing is that you have to make upfront arrangements if you want to discuss with these companies. Today's episode will be on three things. I already mentioned them: automotive products, automotive technologies, and automotive HMIs. These three parts, from the generic to the concrete, I will run through a couple of things that I have seen there. Let's start with the automotive products. Pretty exciting exhibit was the Aphila 1 by Sony and Honda. It's a car. It's a pretty big electric sedan. And Sony and Honda have shown this in the past 3 or 4 years. And it seems like they have reached, they're very close to serious production. They announced prices. It will be something like around, I don't know, $89,000, this car. They showed the technical data, charging times and power. And the interesting thing here is that this car is a product of two totally different companies, Honda on one side and Sony on the other side. It's a typical example of one of the strong future trends in the automotive industry, the software-defined vehicle. So Honda is providing everything that is connected to the car as it is a car. The drivetrain, the tires, suspension, the interior, the seats, the air condition, everything that is, let's say, a traditional car, the aerodynamics, the crash safety, all that is provided by Honda. And Sony is providing the software. Sony is bringing in its product competence, its UX competence, its software competence to create the experience, to make this car a user experience, all the gaming things that they know, all this experience goes into this car. It will be very interesting to see how that will work out at the very end. First of all, from a business side, but also for me, much more the focus from user experience side. How is this working out, and is this really giving us the best of both worlds, or do we end up with some kind of poor compromise? Another vehicle shown was the Zoox car. Again, they have been showing this in the past 2 or 3 years. And I talked to one representative of Zoox at the booth and said, "Hey, guys, this looks exactly like last year and the year before." And I said, "Yes, it looks like it is the same car, but it isn't, definitely not." The exciting thing here is that they are close to getting the approval of running this one on public roads. It is a people mover, basically a box on four wheels with 4 or 6 seats inside. And it will run fully autonomous. No driver in there, no steering wheel, no paddles, no instruments. And they got the approval during the CES to drive this car up and down the strip. And the improvements they have made were on the invisible side, on the software side, on the legal side, on the approval side. So they worked a lot on that to bring this car closer to reality. If this shall work out, and Waymo is on roads already, so Zoox has the chance. It's they have the economical power. It's their subsidiary of Amazon. So I think they can do it. And then for me, looking backwards, the automation, the autonomous driving is faster than I had expected. I had the idea, no, this will take a few more years, 10, 15 more years until we see it on a large scale on road. Now we see another company going out. So maybe I was wrong in the past. I underestimated the speed and the progress that autonomy in driving is making. So yeah, let's wait and see. It will be super interesting to see how they will do on roads. Another exhibit I really liked was the Suzuki Blank robot, which is a skateboard. And skateboard by means of that you have four tires, four wheels, a battery pack, some electronics, again fully autonomous, and then you have a couple of pots, a couple of different applications you can plug on top. A few years ago, 2-3 years ago, there were many of these exhibits to be seen, of these skateboards. And with Suzuki, one of the major car makers, Suzuki, a major car maker, I don't know, they're not really one of the biggest ones, but a long-term established car maker is taking over this concept. And let's wait and see. I see a couple of use cases, a couple of applications there. The big advantage is that in the skateboard, you can collect those technologies that mature pretty quickly. The batteries, the electronics, and with the things you plug in, they can remain pretty long on roads. Whether it's a cooling pod, whether it's a passenger transport, or whether it's a delivery part, whatever it may be that you can theoretically plug into these skateboards, but they can remain pretty long. But that would then mean that you have a set of skateboards driving on the road with maybe even without a part, and that you call them and then you plug in your personal part and you drive around with this. You let yourself drive around with this. But interesting to see that one of the major players and established players of the automotive industry is into this concept. Over the past years, mobile machinery, construction machinery, agricultural vehicles took a certain amount of space in the West Hall. This year, it was, from my feeling, bigger than ever before. Mobile machinery, mining machinery, Caterpillar, for example, showed this a couple of years ago already. A fully autonomous mining truck. John Deere is very much into autonomous driving on the fields when they harvest. They maybe have a big harvester, and then you have some processing machines, and then you have some tractors transporting all the goods that you have harvested. And if you see them on fields, sometimes they are driving fully autonomous, fully parallel, connected, combined to harvest the crops that you have. Also, the integration of artificial intelligence, and I have not yet talked about artificial intelligence, but I can tell you one thing, this was the one major trend on the CES, so in the next episode I will talk about artificial intelligence, but they integrated all this. And the construction machineries and the agriculture machines, they have the advantage that they have far less complex environments than the automotive industry faces on real roads. So they are much more advanced as far as artificial intelligence integration and autonomy is concerned. Plus the fact that it's a professional application. So you save time, money, staff, you save resources when you have autonomous vehicles. For me, this seems to be more and more the entry point of autonomous driving. A couple of weeks ago on a conference, somebody asked me, hey, why do we need autonomous driving in private cars? And we were talking about this and we agreed more or less, yeah, it may make sense one day, but it really makes sense when you replace a human driver. We have the shortage of driver, we have a shortage of truck drivers. I talked about this in one of the past episodes. We have a shortage in agricultural workers and construction workers. And if you have that, with autonomy, you can save money and you can ensure the quality of your service. So it makes sense to have it there. And this is why those are the two reasons, the lower complexity and the professional applications you have in mobile machinery, why construction machines and agricultural machines are ahead of passenger cars as far as the autonomy is concerned. I talked about micromobility, that they eat up a lot of space in the North Hall. The electric drivetrain simplifies the development of new vehicle concepts. It is much easier to handle. It is far less complex than a combustion drivetrain. It is more flexible. So you have new vehicle concepts and you have no players on the market. And sometimes you have real, real cool solutions for urban mobility, for inner city mobility. And those listening to me from the US and Europe, they are in Southeastern Asia and Southern America, in India, far more dense areas in inner cities with far more complex traffic, and the density there and the speed is much higher. And this is why micromobility in these areas faces a much brighter future than in the Western world. And some of these solutions were really cool, and some of them were a little strange. One of these strange things was a suitcase you can sit on and that drives you through airport terminals. That was the application they had there. Okay, you can do this. I see the use case, but does it really make sense? But there have been rickshaws, for example, that I found very nice, e-bikes and scooters to sit on, scooters to stand on. And the simplicity of the electric drivetrain will present us more and more crazy and strange and new and innovative and sometimes very useful solutions. And one final remark on e-vottles, these flying drones to transport humans. For me, the question is, does anyone really need them? Is this really an answer to a question someone has asked? They work like helicopters, and I see the idea behind this. Yeah, I'm saying, okay, we want to have flying cars that we can use the third dimension to get around traffic jams. And if we're very consequently in thinking about this, I mean, today we have 2D traffic jams, and in the future we will have 3D traffic jams if we have many of these flying drones, of these e-vottles. And I have no idea where they shall take off and land, because they need a lot of space. And during my time as a volunteer lifeguard, I had a rescue mission where I had to swim in the open sea under a flying helicopter. And so the doctor was flying in with the helicopter and he wanted to check, hey, what are these guys down there doing at the moment, and how's the status of the patient? And It was extremely difficult because the air pressure produced by these rotators, they are so high that you get pressed underwater while you swim under it. And imagine you have this on a central city square, some Evotel landing there. Everybody has to go to the side. You have a lot of dust that is blowing up, and I don't know. And having them only as a shuttle service between airports and inner city areas where you land on rooftops of skyscrapers, yeah, it could be an application, but is that really worth the thing? And two of the German companies working on this are bankrupt at the moment, which I think shows the directions. On the other hand, China is investing in this technology. And if China is doing something, they have a good reason to do so. And maybe in a year or two, I will tell you I was wrong in 2025. And yeah, so let's wait and see what's happening there. But for me, e-vottles are more like an answer for a question no one has really asked. Let's move on from the products to the technologies. The major technology is AI. AI is everywhere, artificial intelligence, and it plays an important role in the vehicle industry, from market analysis through the development of products, production, down to the vehicle. It is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's either in the product or it is part of the development process. And a lot of that makes sense. A lot of that is smart solutions, is bringing us really forward. On the other hand, pretty often it is a buzzword. There's a lot of hype behind this. So to me, it seems like every company puts a sticker, AI driven, AI developed, AI integrated onto something where it may be somehow involved, but it may not be really, really useful. So artificial intelligence, top focus of CES 2025. Interesting exhibits in the area of HMI tooling, those tools that you use to develop an HMI solution. Rideware showed the Kanzi tool, the latest version of the Kanzi. They have an AI integration in there. So the representative of the company showed me that it's pretty easy. He used the example of a cluster instrument. And he said, okay, I want to have the speed here, and I want to have the charging status there, and I want to have the ADAS right in the middle. The entire thing shall be in a fancy pink. And then this solution put out half a dozen of different design suggestions. So it's a generative HMI that is behind the generative AI that is behind this, creating HMI solutions. They are not as good as a designer as of today. That may change in the future, but if you want to have a quick demo, if you want to do an HMI to show some new technology to a customer or on CES, then you can use this one, and the quality is absolutely sufficient for applications like this. Basemark, also a Finnish company like Rideware, they showed their tools and their services in the area of augmented reality head-up display. So they are the ones that provide a tool that you can apply to develop the software for head-up displays with a focus on augmented reality. Very advanced technology, excellent results, very good. My friends from Candera have also been present, not with an own booth, but on their parent company, Cagafe. Also some improvements in their tool, and they are moving forward also into the right direction, AI integration, automation of the tools. So my belief is these three companies are ahead. There are others like Electrobit, like Qt, that are also providing respective either tools or services or a combination of both. Interesting area, helps us to make technology sexy, to move technology forward. Android Automotive had a strong focus. My partner P3 Group presented the Spark solution for the second time. This is a set of Android automotive applications that can be, first of all, downscaled, which makes it very interesting for two-wheelers, micro-mobility, because you have very quick and simple and easy solutions. Android Automotive brings a lot in, and the developer can then focus on the implementation of the functions of the HMI, of the realization. So all the basic work, the groundwork, everything that happens behind the curtain, that is something Android Automotive brings in. And this is the big advantage. On the other side, the downturn is there is no light without darkness. You sell your soul to Google if you use this one. To a different size, to a different extent. You have, if you can use just the basics, then you are more independent, or you can use the full Android Automotive stack with everything, just put your HMI on top. Then Google gets everything that you do and that the users do with this device. So it is a strategic decision. I believe that if you want to have a quick, focused development, and we need to speed up with automotive developments, it can be an extremely good solution. And technology number four, I would like you to talk about after the three more software AI-oriented ones, something real physical, something you could touch and see. The also Finnish company Verge, a Finnish producer of electric bikes, presented the Donut. Verge, in the past years, has presented motorbikes with an electric engine that is part of the wheel. It is like a donut that is inside of the tire, on the inside of the tire, and produces its torque there. And the idea of this rotating donut-shaped electric engine was transferred into an own product. So you can have this one, you can buy, you do not need to buy a Verge motorcycle, but you can buy the donut itself and can use it for your own vehicles, for your drones, for machines that you have. The advantage is that you have a small, lightweight electric engine with high torque. It's comparably easy from a mechanical side. So you can implement that pretty easy. You have the problem with the unsprung masses if you use this one as a tire engine. The idea of the automotive industry is to create maximum effort. The unsprung masses should be minimized as much as possible. This engine is the opposite. But with all these electric suspensions, it may be possible to compensate for that, to get the advantage of low space, low weight, and high torque out of the donut engine. Let's move on to the HMI part. One generic thing that I saw is that we see another trend in cockpit architecture in cars. The traditional car had the cluster instrument, a couple of buttons on the center stack. And 25 years ago, we came up with the infotainment systems, small screens in earlier times, then larger and larger screens in the past years. Then we had the idea of a pillar-to-pillar huge display in front of the driver. And now we have the tendency for a big screen in the center stack and a very small screen with only the major, the most important information in front of the driver in a cluster instrument. Very often a digital speed and maybe the charging status, and that's it. Yeah? And all the rest is shown somewhere else. And a couple of cars, amongst others, the Lotus Elettre, they have this architecture, and to me it seems like this is a trend we see, but it is one trend. So we have other trends in cockpits as well, but this seems to be something that is pretty serious. One of the very few super exciting new HMI solutions that I have seen was the BMW Panoramic Drive. That's the latest version of the so-called iDrive. BMW started with rethinking the automotive interior 1999-2000 with the first iDrive they had in the BMW 7 Series at that time. And they have always been pretty advanced and very good in the HMI and the user experience with what they do. And now they have the next generation. So the Panoramic Drive contains basically four major components. That's the Panoramic Vision. That's a head-up display that shows its information on the lower end of the windscreen. Over the entire windscreen. It can be highly dynamic, you can adapt it. And between the A pillars, there is this pretty close to the line of sight, this information area. Then you have a 3D head-up display right in front of the driver for navigation, for advanced driver assistance system information, lane keeping, yeah, all that is shown there. Then you have a center stack display with the infotainment, and then you have a multifunctional steering wheel with quite some Shytech philosophy in it. So the devices that you don't need, they fade out. The devices that you need, they fade in. And BMW has been very active in Shytech devices over the past years, and this is now becoming more and more reality. So Panoramic Vision will be in cars later this year. And as I said, pretty outstanding thing. I like the company Gentex. Gentex is originally coming out of the business of rearview mirrors, of digital rearview mirrors. So integrating a display into a rearview mirror, showing a camera picture, either from a camera in the back of the car, showing what's behind the car, or integrating a rear seat camera. So if your kids are on the back seat, you can see in the rear view mirror, are they sleeping? Are they okay? Or is there something wrong there? You don't need to turn your head to see that. So this is the original business they had. And what I like about them is they show small solutions that solve real problems. This year it was an electric sun visor. It was a transparent display. You can flip down and it can get dark if it's bright outside, if you want to use it as a sun visor. And then if not, then you can use it as an additional display showing things that need to be shown there. From my point of view, pretty cool solution. I think we will see it in a cars either as an OEM device or as an aftermarket device. But nice thing. Another HMI technology, AI-based speech recognition. The original speech recognition in cars, they have been pretty bulky, fixed grammar, fixed vocabulary. Then Mercedes was the first to come up with a very flexible open speech system in the MBUX. And we see advancements in that, in personalization and adaption to use cases and adaption to users if it's AI-based, artificial intelligence-based. Head-up displays. I saw a couple of super interesting head-up display solutions. My favorite was on the Cerus Holographics booth. They produce a foil that allows you holographic head-up displays. They are in series in the Ford Bronco. And I was very much impressed by this because you can use the entire windscreen as a head-up display. And you can separate driver and passenger. So if the passenger, the front seat passenger, sees a movie, watches TV, the driver is not seeing anything due to the holographic character of the foil. And whatever the driver sees is not visible by the passenger, by the front seat passenger. And that is, for me, a pretty cool thing. We can use this area we have in front of the driver, and we can use it specifically to the use cases we have for the driver and the passenger. And last but not least, definitely not least, Grevus, a German Hamburg-based company, they are involved in the development of haptic actors and acoustic actors. And they presented their haptic seat. I have seen this, I think, 2 years ago for the first time. Was impressed by the quality. Now they have shown their new generation. Again, very impressive. Big progress they made. More use cases, more realistic haptic feedback that they are showing. So, for example, it's a lane-keeping assistant. Yeah, and the seat vibrates. If you leave the lane to the left, it vibrates on the left and on the right, respectively. It's a blind spot monitoring support. So if there's a car on the left behind you, the seat vibrates respectively. If you make a parking procedure and you tend to run into the car behind you, you get a haptic input. But also more fun kind of things. Some of you may remember the times in the 80s and 90s when we had subwoofers on our front seats to get the bass of the music not only to our ears but to our entire bodies, and they can imitate that. It's a very nice thing. You sit on this and then whoop, whoop, whoop. Your seat vibrates with the bass of the music. For me, one of the, again, a good solution, very much towards realization. It is series ready. You can have this, and it's a very, very interesting HMI solution. All right, that's it for today. Next episode, more about trends, a bit generic, the situation of the automotive industry, and the open questions that I brought back from Vegas. Again, if you want to listen, if you want, do not want to listen, but to read all the details, send me a message on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de or peter.rusker@beyond-hmi.de or contact me on LinkedIn. You'll get your copy of my CES report right away. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.